Pyrrhus of Epirus. Pyrrhus begins his Sicilian campaign. Now, the Carthaginians that faced Pyrrhus in Sicily were completely different from what he's faced thus far, that is, Greeks, Macedonians, and Romans. The Carthaginians, for the most part, neglected their infantry. They did take some interest in their cavalry. And the reason is that they employed foreign mercenaries rather than citizen levies. Now, this is probably a little bit of an exaggeration, as the Carthaginian citizens did, in fact, serve in defense of their own city and in the Carthaginian fleet, which was their specialty. It is, however, generally correct when applied to Carthaginian overseas armies. These were made up of a number of different nationalities, but commanded by Carthaginian officers that were drawn from the Carthaginian aristocracy. The bulk of the army at the time of Pyrrhus generally appears to have consisted of African spearmen drawn from Carthage's Libyan conquests, and to a lesser extent, troops from Spain. To label such troops mercenaries is probably a little bit misleading. They were recruited from Carthaginian ruled areas, and auxiliaries may be more accurate of a term rather than a negative term. These troops were usually supplemented with genuine mercenaries recruited from outside Carthage's empire, such as Gauls. Even Italians, Numidians, and Greeks are all recorded. In Sicily, the Greeks are probably the most numerous. Tactically, however, the Carthaginians fought in a similar manner to the Greeks. They formed up for battle in the traditional Hellenistic manner, a single line of deep formed infantry units in the center, with cavalry on the flanks, rather than the multiple line Roman method. In their early wars against the Greeks in Sicily, the Carthaginians relied predominantly on their infantry center. The Carthaginian army during this campaign appears to have either been incapable of defeating Pyrrhus's army in the field, or possibly unwilling to even face it. Their battle line, consisting mostly of close order, spear-armed troops, would have absolutely no answer to Pyrrhus's pike-armed infantry, as well as his elephants. After settling affairs in Syracuse, Pyrrhus took control of the city of Leontini. He then marched on the city of Agrigentum, where he took control from the already allied Sesostris. Pyrrhus also took over the 30 other cities that the leader Sesostris had controlled. These cities provided Pyrrhus with 8,000 infantry and 800 cavalry, supposedly excellent troops equal in ability to the Epirates. Good news then came also from the city of Enna, which had expelled its Carthaginian garrison and allied itself with Pyrrhus. These reinforcements brought Pyrrhus's army up to a total of 30,000 infantry, 2,500 cavalry, and his elephants. So far, Pyrrhus's campaign had basically a triumphant procession through southeastern Sicily, basically just winning over the Greeks without having to fight. And this is not uncommon in Sicilian history, that they will not fight. They'll just switch sides very quickly. From Agrigentum, Pyrrhus would have to cross the river Halcus and invade hostile territory of the Carthaginians. Unfortunately, at this point, we have no detailed source for Pyrrhus's Sicilian campaign. The account by Diodorus, which would have been based predominantly on the historian Hieronymus of Cardia, and therefore possibly detailed and reliable, has been lost. All that remains is an epitome compiled by a later Byzantine librarian. Its account is brief and mostly lacking in detail. It describes a number of successful sieges, but no battles against the Carthaginian. Now, Justin claims, however, that Pyrrhus fought many successful battles with the Carthaginian. He uses the Latin word prolia, which is generally applied to land or naval battles rather than sieges. From this, it can be inferred that as well as besieging a number of cities, Pyrrhus also defeated the Carthaginians in a number of battles. Unfortunately, the historian Justin is incredibly careless and cannot be relied upon if he is the only choice you have. It is possible that he simply used the wrong word, prolia, rather than the more exact oxidio, meaning siege. Elsewhere in his work, however, Justin does use obsidio when mentioning sieges. On this occasion, it is possible that he has accurately recorded events that have been lost in other sources. Goldsworthy, one of the great modern historians on the ancient world, points out that the mountainous geography of Sicily does not favor the movement of large armies and creates many good defensive positions. This makes it difficult for a commander to force battle on an unwilling enemy. The key to controlling Sicily was to control its cities. This would make sieges far more important than battles to any would-be conqueror of the island. Justin may therefore be referring to the two battles that took place in the last year of the campaign against the Mamertines and the Carthaginians. Theodorus' account may then be an accurate portrayal of the first 2 years of the war. The exact dating of incidents in Pyrrhus' Sicilian campaign is not recorded. Most likely, events up to the gathering of his forces at Agrigentum occupied the remainder of 278 BCE. Pyrrhus began the next year by continuing his march west to the city of Heraclea. Here the Carthaginians stood to defend their own border. Pyrrhus simply stormed the city, capturing it from its Carthaginian garrison. He then captured Azones. From there he marched to Selinus, which again he overcame once more without a fight. Up to this point, Pyrrhus had been operating against cities that were occupied by Carthaginians but inhabited by Greeks. From this moment on, Pyrrhus would be advancing in the territory inhabited by Elymians and the Carthaginians themselves, and would expect greater resistance. Despite this, the Elymian cities of Halcyae and Segesta also came over to him without resistance. Pyrrhus then moved against the Elymian city of Eryx, modern Eryx. This city was held by a large Carthaginian garrison and occupied a naturally strong position. It was situated in a mountain 750 meters high. On the summit stood a magnificent temple of Venus. The city extended along the hill under the actual summit, the ascent to it being very long and steep on all sides. It is here that the Carthaginians chose to stand their ground. Well, I'm going to stop here because we want to have a little bit of a discussion about what's been going on with Pyrrhus at this point. You only have to take a map of Sicily and look at it. You have Mount Etna in the middle, and then it all cones down to the seas. And if you were to take a map, there are several books on the history of Sicily that go back this far, and they usually have maps of what the various Greek city-states looked like. And you'll see that these are all along the coasts or a little bit inland and different areas, so it's a little easier to see how it's moving on. It's always difficult to visualize Sicilian campaigns in the ancient world without having a map next to you. And so on the one hand, we have Pyrrhus, who's seemingly just moving over everybody because the Greeks recognize that he's more powerful. So why are we wasting our time? We'll just give in. He won't loot and pillage us. We'll add ourselves, send him a few troops, and he'll move on somewhere else. Maybe they don't like the Carthaginian threat either. So that just moves him closer to Carthage. Of course, the Carthaginians, with the type of army that they've created, are better at defensive positions. And Pyrrhus is not concerned about naval operations. All he needed to do was get across from Italy into Sicily. He's not going to get in a boat and march on Carthage. So his action is going to be restricted strictly to the island. So now we'll get to see in our next show this battle to take this city. The sources for this are Plutarch's Lives by Plutarch, Wars of Alexander's Successors, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Bennett and Roberts, Pyrrhus of Epirus by Champion, History of Rome by Livy, Epirus, Geography, History, and Topography by Hammond, and War in the Hellenistic World by Charlottis. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.